This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington, and I'm talking with Gary Scheinman, and it is just so fantastic to have a chance to talk with you.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Kate, and I'm excited to talk about my music for Torn.
Yeah, it's really, really thrilling. I am really looking forward to playing this game. It's coming out very soon. It was created by Aspyr, which is kind of a new thing for them. I remember seeing them as the publisher for the Tomb Raider games and lots of other things. You know, you've talked to them. What was it, do you think, that sort of put the spark in their studio to make their own game?
You know, that's a good question. I have not had that Genesis question discussion with them, you know, so I don't know what really started that process. They reached out to me, Neil Glancy, who's the creative director. I'd never worked with him before, but he was a big fan of my music from BioShock. And the game has, I think they were very inspired by BioShock. Although I wouldn't call the game a BioShock clone in any way. It's very unique. But in any event, they reached out and they got me really excited about the game. And it's really been one of the most fun creative opportunities I've had. It's like a virtual movie. It's like you're in a movie. It's really story-driven. And there's a dark, interesting mystery at the center, which, like BioShock, you know, I think that's one area where it is similar, you know?
Yeah, the twists in BioShock are just kind of mind-bending. And I know that they've described this game as a kind of an homage to The Twilight Zone and more recently Black Mirror. We can't reveal too much because the game's not out yet. So
buy the game.
Well, I just recently had my first VR experience. It was at the Game Developers Conference this spring. And I was just blown away. I stepped into this world with icy rocks and I actually felt kind of cold. And so I'm wondering, you know, what your first experience with VR was like.
Well, this was not actually my first VR game. I scored a game a couple years ago called Io Moon, which was a really cool trip to the moon of Jupiter called Io. And so it was actually my second virtual reality game experience. So, but both were fascinating. The technology is constantly improving. The one issue I had with EO or IO, I'm not sure how you pronounce.
I think it's IO.
Is it IO?
Yeah, I think so.
It is IO. It was that because there's a lot of movement and because things have been improving, there's some issue with like motion that can be a little physically discomforting, shall we say. But there's none of that in Torn. For one thing, you're not like shooting around and moving real fast. But second of all, the technology keeps improving. And one of the issues, obviously it's not related to music, but one of the issues was just that the technology, when you move your eyes, it was slightly behind your eye movement. It didn't track quite quickly enough because the technology was not quite there yet. And so they've done a lot to improve that technology. And now people are not experiencing that sort of motion discomfort or motion illness that was prevalent. So that is a good thing. But this is a different game from Io, which Io was a visit and it was fascinating and it was beautiful and you're in a crazy world they created. But this is more like you're in a movie because it's really story driven and a really sophisticated script with twists and turns and unexpected red herrings, and all this sort of, it's sort of a mystery, but it's a really modern dark mystery. So it was cool.
The premise of it is so interesting because this video blogger, I don't know how she finds out about this, but there's a scientist, Lawrence Talbot, who was on the verge of just this incredible breakthrough discovery. And then he vanished and he's been missing for like 60 odd years or so. And so she's intrigued enough to go and find out what's going on. And I think what's so interesting about it is that it kind of shows that VR can be more than just a gimmick, a way of whizzing through space or doing stuff like that. Because from what I've seen, there really is, as you say, a very sophisticated storyline with this.
Very much so. My feeling is like it's the beginning of what I always suspected VR could be. VR is going to be all kinds of things, But one of the things that it could be, and I think will be, is almost like being in a movie, where you are a participant in a movie. So the story, it's so story driven that you feel like you're inside and you're part of a movie experience, a story experience. And that is fascinating to me. I love that idea, and I love how they pull that off. And of course, the music was an opportunity to assist all that and create a lot of really cool mood and to write some very pretty cues. You know, this is not just dark music at all. Actually, there's some actually really beautiful, nostalgic, and really pretty musical moments, which are really fun for me. I love writing pretty music too. I mean, I'm sort of known for writing a lot of dark, scary stuff, which I also enjoy. But it's nice to be able to write something that is melodic and beautiful.
Oh, and these cues that you've sent me are just absolutely wonderful. The palette that you've chosen is so almost transparent. And I love the use of the celesta. That to me just really is such a signature sound with this soundtrack.
Yes, celesta and harp as well. We had a real harp. Soprano saxophone, which you don't hear a lot of soprano saxophone. I love the soprano saxophone.
Yeah.
It's like chance to use the soprano sax and an orchestra. Of course, we recorded this in Los Angeles. And for those who are interested, and probably most of the playing audience is not particularly interested, but you know, from us perspective of composers, it's been problematic to record in Los Angeles because of the AFM, the Musicians Union. And there's just been a lot of problems recording here because the union would not agree to the buyouts that the industry required. So there's been a whole new look at video games by the union, and they really want this music recorded in Los Angeles. So I worked very closely with the AFM, and they gave me a contract that was very workable, and Aspire was willing to go along with the very modest restrictions. There's almost no restrictions. They just can't put the music in another game, that's all, without paying something. So as long as they keep in this game, and it could be in, if there are additional torns in some future, you know, they can put it in that, but they just can't essentially make it into a music library. And they didn't want to do that, so they were totally cool about that. So I got to record with my favorite musicians at the Fox Newman Scoring Stage here in Los Angeles, which is like, to me, I've been to Abbey Road, I've been many, many places around the world recording. To me, Fox is my favorite. So it was just a delight, and I got literally the best players in town came and played quite beautifully. So it was, from beginning to end, it was just, I loved working with Aspire and Neil and the team at Aspire. They were just fantastic. You know, I say that, and I don't, and I'm not just, you know, saying that to, because maybe Neil's listening. it has, as Henry Kissinger once said, it has the added advantage of being true. How cynical can you be? But it really, and one of the things I do really love about writing music for video games is the people you work with are delightful. That doesn't mean they're not exacting and want very specific things. And really, if they don't like something, they'll tell you and you have to rework it. But the some of the stuff you get in film and television, some of the directors, especially in film, can sometimes it can be egoists, shall we say. Mm-hmm. And I've never experienced that in video games. So, and this particular team was delightful to work with. They're located in Austin, Texas, and Neil flew out and he had a great time attending the recording session, and he really enjoyed the whole process himself, I think so.
I have found too that every single person that I've talked with in the industry, I tend to obviously focus on the composers, but every single person has just been so excited about what they do. And maybe that's the difference, because they've never lost that sense of, we're doing something really cool here. We get to do, we get to follow our passions and do what we've always wanted to do. So maybe that's a big part of it.
Yeah. And composers are the worst of the bunch. Just kidding. I'm kidding. If any of my friends are listening, that was a joke.
Well, let's just, I'd love to back up just for a second, like rewind the tape, because you mentioned that this Fox scoring stage is your very, very favorite place to record. Why is that?
Well, several things. The acoustics of the room are spectacularly good. Some of the best film scores historically. The room is old. I mean, it's been there for like 50 plus years. As long as that, as old as the Talbot story.
Yeah, right.
They've been recording movies. I don't know how long Fox. It's probably been there 60 or 70 years recording. It's an old scoring stage. And, the sound of it is, it's a big room with very high ceilings. And one of the things is you can add digital reverb to any recording in the smallest, tightest studios. But a natural sounding, sort of reverb where the room is responding in a really beautiful, attractive way is a really powerful addition to live orchestral recording. That there's nothing like it. And the way the room reinforces the low end and strings is just really, it's lovely. And you also have a very, very expert team of professionals running the studio. They have just first-rate equipment and mics. And so it's just in every way a super professional room, but the best part is the quality, the sonic quality of the room and the players. So of course, you get, if you're working with the best players in LA. So it's just the players and the room responding to each other in really positive ways.
That is so cool. Obviously, musicians bring the best, their best attitude wherever they end up recording. But do you think they brought like some special energy knowing that they were going to be recording on that scoring stage?
Well, the players that came were very experienced. They record there all the time, films and television, more likely films. So, they were experienced. They really played extraordinarily well the day that we recorded this. So, I think they're professionals. They always bring their best game to the stage. So I don't know that they had any special fairy dust that day, but it sounded great.
Yeah, it really did. The tracks that you've shared with me, like I said, they're really special, and I'd love to talk specifically about some of them. But just one more question about that. How big was the orchestra?
It was about, I think it was like 40 players.
Oh, wow.
Which is that's not a particularly big orchestra. Yeah. I mean, you could, like some of the most famous films have 80, 90 players, But that is not always the sound you want. This is not a big bombastic score. So 40 was perfect for it, And, we enhanced it with a few samples as well. It's not all orchestra. It's mostly orchestra in the final recordings. But there's some percussion. We had no live percussion, so the percussion was all samples, and a few other special sounds were samples as well. But most of it is live orchestra.
Yeah, it's just such a beautiful sound. I mean, starting with that title sequence, because it really sets the stage for the mystery that's contained in this house. Was that the first cue that you wrote, or had you been kicking things around for a while before that one finally got nailed down the way you wanted it?
That was like the second or third cue I wrote. At first, I wrote a theme for the Talbot character and which got incorporated into the that particular cue that you're referring to. So no, I didn't start there, but it was fairly early on.
I read that while you were working on the music for Bioshock Infinite, you hadn't really defined what the sound of the score was going to be until you saw a trailer with Elizabeth and wrote the music for that. And then that kind of like unlocked all of the sound. I hope I'm remembering that right.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a really critical moment because I only realized that because I was kind of like frustrated that I wasn't really finding it. And then afterwards, when all of a sudden I wrote the theme for Elizabeth, and then I said, gosh, it makes sense because they didn't really completely solidify the direction for the game until they made her so central. And I just thought, well, that makes total sense. And they didn't know they didn't quite have their game figured out. And then when they did, I could figure out the music. So that really, when I realized it, made total sense.
Yeah. And what was it about the music that you wrote for her that made everything else easier then? Was it the particular sound or the orchestration?
It was a sound of like very small, like just two or three strings performance, very simple, harmonically simple, and just something that captured her character. And it really inspired Ken Levine, who is the creative director. And it just sort of gave me confidence to move forward after we got that, and he's responded so positively to that. So it was just a lot of things that sort of came together.
Was there a moment in this score where you were kind of just kicking stuff around and then you finally had one of those aha moments?
Well, I think it was critically important to find the theme for Talbot. And that took some work, and it took, you know, like a week or more of like messing around with different ideas until I finally found just the right sound. And then Neil really loved it. He was really happy with the Talbot sound. And then once I had that, then that particular moment in the game is really scored to picture. It's really almost like film score. When you see it like on film, and I think you've seen the video of it, it is nothing like in reality. You are in this giant room, like, and you're flying through like all this technology, you know, from that period. It has all this sort of almost steampunkish technology, you know. So that's what you're doing. Once you kind of get going, you go underneath and you see all this wiring and technology from when Talbot was living in this mansion, but you're surrounded by it. When you're just looking at it on the video, it looks really cool. But when you're seeing it in VR, it's like, amazing.
Yeah, because it's the kind of thing you can take your time and sort of like process it. And you're right, being surrounded by it is a completely different experience.
Yeah, very much so. So that was like playing picture. And then you come out on the other end and you see the title of the game, Torn. And it sort of has a little of the emotions of the game sort of in very, very short period of time, from sort of ecstasy to dark and menacing and expressive. And so it's got kind of everything going for it. Wow. I mean, in the sense that it kind of is the essence of the entire game sort of distilled, shall we say, into a minute or two.
That's something that it just blows me away that you can do as a composer, is create this snapshot that reinforces what's in the game, and the game would not be the same without the music. And I don't know, I'm just fangirling here. It's just really cool that, you know, you've got this incredible gift. So it's just amazing.
You know what? Really, I feel like I'm sort of just channeling it from somewhere, and it's really. The best is when the creators, the people that hire me, have done something really special that inspire me. That really is, you know, I'm just like blessed when that happens. Because sometimes you work on stuff that's really cool, but it's just not quite as inspiring. But your best work, I think, most composers would admit, it comes when you're doing something very special.
Well, as you were working with them, how much of the game was there when they first approached you? I mean, were you, they, it sounds like, made the game in about a year and a half?
Yeah, I mean, they did. I wasn't involved for a year and a half. I was involved for just like a few months, 3 or 4 months. But I went out to Austin when I first, just before I started writing music, and I met with the team, and they let me play the game in the condition it was in. It was not complete. It was still rough. And you can only play certain parts of the game. They were still working on it, but it definitely gave you a sense of the game. And of course, I had, you know, I was able to see the script and have discussions with them about what was the game, you know, really about. So that was really, really helpful. And then as they generated builds of the game and it got more sophisticated, they would send me builds. Now, I do not own a virtual reality setup. I was going to buy one, but then I have a very good friend who does audio for virtual reality, and he just said, you can come over and play the game anytime I want at his place. So that's what I did. They would send him a build. He signed an NDA, which they do. The word, there's NDA craziness, which means non-disclosure. You won't you know, send it to send builds of it to a friend.
To, right. Sworn to secrecy.
Yeah, and sworn to secrecy. So I would go over to his house and play the game. And so as it progressed, I think it was like four different times I went over there as the game progressed. So I can not only see the game and be inspired to write the music I was writing, but also to see how the music was being implemented and if I had any notes on, because I was involved in implementation on, like I was sort of an advisor on implementation. I wasn't the final word. They had hired a audio guy, but I was advising them and giving them ideas. So when they'd have a build and they'd put, as I would put my music in it, because I would put my music in it as mock-ups. They weren't the final orchestral because we didn't record that till the end. But they would put my mock-ups in and then I could really see how it's working and see if the music was implemented in an appropriate way or as best as it could. And I'd give them back notes.
That is very cool. And a lot of composers don't get that opportunity because as freelancers, they just ship the music off and they let the music supervisor or the audio director take care of placement. So what were some of the things that you suggested to them for how your music should work in the game?
Well, I mean, some of it was not particularly sophisticated or different. It's just you would enter a new part of the game and you'd see something really kind of cool. And they wanted music to sort of introduce you and help set the mood for like a whole section of this mansion, or there's some other places you go that are very, very cool. And so that is not particularly complex, but there's an instance, I can't get into too much detail because I can't give it away, where the music had to sync with dialogue, but not necessarily with the images. So that was an interesting challenge because I've scored the picture many times, but I've never scored the dialogue. So that was still in time because the dialogue was recorded and they sent me that. And there were moments where the music had to sort of hit important dramatic dialogue points. So that was interesting. And that was something where, you know, they didn't know that was possible or they hadn't really thought that through. And I said, yeah, it's very doable. Just send me the dialogue. I can drop it in. It's just audio into my music software. And then I can just match to it. So that was pretty easy.
Wow, that's really fascinating. Did you have to tune the music so that it wouldn't compete with the voices?
Yeah, I mean, you're always doing that. You try to be aware of not only dialogue, but any sound effects. So for instance, you're in an environment where there's a lot of high-end sound effects and noise, you're going to have the music in the lower register because it's not competing directly with all that, with that register. So similarly, in this particular, the scene I just described, it's two people talking and the music is playing a really subtle underscoring role. And, you know, so it was just like scoring to picture, really. You're getting the feedback. So if something's not working or if something's fighting dialogue, then you need to change it.
Yeah, it sounds like really old school in a fun way, like those movies from the 40s, you know, with Joan Crawford and John Garfield or something. And
right. Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, it really is that sort of moment in the game. So I can't say too much more.
Nope. Not yet. You know, it almost seems like from looking at the trailer and reading the little bit that I can, it almost seems like the house itself is a character. And there's one cue in particular, observatory, which, you know, looking at the panorama of that room, it's got an openness to it and a real sense of wonder.
Definitely. That is a great example of where the music really kind of helps define the atmosphere. And it's a very sort of exciting, beautiful moment in the game where you see something, you know, you open sort of like the drapes and you see like, wow, this is really a beautiful place.
Yeah.
And the music helps establish that and create a beautiful environment for it. You know, even though the game is dark, it has those moments where of sort of exultation, you know.
Thank you. Yeah, and there's another Q, Leaf Storm. I think we get to see maybe just a tiny part of that in the trailer with this flurry of leaves around a statue. I really love that Q because of its busyness and just there's a lot of energy there.
Yeah, that's it actually is very interactive. It's really sort of a puzzling part of the game, and that music accompanies it and creates a really kind of beautiful mood for it. So you're doing these puzzles as part of the, you know, gameplay dynamic that you're participating in. That's what a game is challenging you to do. So you have gameplay challenges, but you also have the story, which is central to it. So it's a cool game.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And it sounds like you had an opportunity to really flesh out the characters, too, with your music. There's a really beautiful, tender cue called Valet. And I mean, I really have to use my imagination here, but it sounds like the valet was kind of an essential part of the household when Talbot was there.
Yeah, it's a part of the house, and the valet is sort of an English character. So to me, that music had sort of a Ralph Vaughan Williams-ish kind of English, old English kind of sound to it, at least in my mind. And that's what I was evoking. Huge fan of Ralph Vaughan Williams. I mean, it's not just Ralph Vaughan Williams, but he's really famous for taking old English themes and folk music and setting it to orchestral, you know.
Yeah. No, I'm a big fan of his too. And that whole era, Gerald Finzi and all of those, that sort of group of composers just came up with this really wonderful, just quintessentially English sound. So that's very cool. But speaking of Vaughan Williams, you know, who are some of the other composers that you listen to when you're like maybe stuck? Stuck or looking for inspiration, I guess.
Oh gosh, there's a lot of composers. I mean, I do have a special soft place in my heart for the early 20th century composers, and Vaughan Williams would very much fit into that category. But, you know, even the more, shall we say, modern, what we consider modern composers like Bartok, Stravinsky and Prokofiev and Shostakovich and all that kind of music. I'm a huge fan of Gustav Mahler And although his music doesn't quite work well as in terms of inspiring underscore of music, it's just his music is just amazing. That's all. And of course, there's all the film music and game music out there that's spectacular. And John Williams being at the very top, inspiring composers for me personally. Jerry Goldsmith. I mean, composers I grew up listening to and deifying, Bernard Herrmann, and of course many other composers, James Newton Howard, James Horner, whole plethora of composers that have been working over the last decades, producing really beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Yeah, I heard, and this may not, this might be just my imagination, but there is a cue in BioShock Infinite, Lighter Than Air, that almost sounds like it could be a lost piece by Charles Ives, because it's got nostalgia and then this sort of undercurrent of really interesting harmonies and stuff, kind of like Charles Ives did.
Definitely. I mean, Charles Ives was a influence, him and Stephen Foster, the songwriter, 19th century songwriter, were definitely inspirations to me when I was writing that score.
I was really enjoying your GDC session, the demo derby at this year's conference. And the thing that I wondered about, because you're so good at focusing on like one thing that's really going to help an up and coming aspiring composer, who were some of your mentors early on?
One of my mentors was George Tremblay, who I studied with for 3 years in the 80s. When I got out of USC, he was my main teacher for that period of time, and he was just such an inspiration to me. He only taught 12-tone music. For those who don't know, 12-tone music, it is a very dissonant style, championed by Arnold Schoenberg, and
Webern and Berg.
But that's all I did was write 12-tone music. But it was really more his overall inspiration, and I did write a 12-tone cue for BioShock Infinite, and I dedicated it to George Tremblay because he had this whole technique for choosing rows, and I used some of my rows from that period to as the inspiration, because he says you're going to create enough rows that you'll never run out of them. So I went back to my old row book, no pun intended, since there is a lot of rowing in the BioShock Infinite.
That's right.
so he was definitely a huge inspiration personally. I mean, I've mentioned some of the composers who inspire me and continue to inspire me. You know, there's a composer I've been listening to, Valentine Silvestro.
Oh, I love his music. Yeah.
Oh, just gorgeous. I mean, I just love Silvestro's stuff. John Crugliano, I just think he is one of the greatest. He's still alive, living composers. Of course, he won an Academy Award for The Red Violin. Mm-hmm. So he actually is a film composer as well as a concert composer. But his best music is his concert music. It's just spectacular.
Yeah. He wrote a really interesting, well, in fact, he's wrote several pieces that have been drawn from his score for The Red Violin. There's like a work for violin and orchestra and then some solo violin pieces. And have you ever thought about creating something like that with your music for BioShock or with another of your scores?
I've certainly done suites of music from BioShock. And as a matter of fact, I will be at Soundtrack Cologne in August. Mm-hmm. And the Cologne Philharmonic will be performing a suite from BioShock.
That's exciting.
That's very exciting because, I mean, not to complain because it's so cool when anyone wants to perform your music, but sometimes you get pickup orchestras that don't have a lot of time to rehearse, but they actually have an orchestra of, you know, the highest quality, like the Cologne Philharmonic. This is a major orchestra. Perform your music. Hopefully they will have a little time to rehearse, but they're just so good. I believe that they would just, you know, really nail it. So I'm very excited about that. And last year in Madrid was a performance of a whole BioShock symphony, really, from all three BioShock games. But, you know, it could be interesting to do what Crugliano did. I know that suite that you're talking about for violin and orchestra, it's really magnificent. It's so cool. It's just so cool. It actually might be cool to take some of the ideas as sort of a starting place and have something inspired by that. One of the downsides would be that I don't own the themes. All that music is what they call work for hire, mm-hmm. meaning that when they hire you and you don't actually own your music, they are the legal authors of your music. So I'd have to get permission from 2K, which they probably would provide. So it's a good idea, Kate. Maybe I'll do it.
Oh, I hope you do. I think there's such a hunger for live performances of game music these days. There was a massive concert at Royal Albert Hall with music from just all kinds of people, Austin Wintory and Jessica Curry and dozens of others. And the place was packed. Albert Hall was just packed. So clearly there's a demand for it. So that would be so cool.
Yeah, that's a good idea, Kate. Maybe you'll inspire somebody. I have to think about it. It's a lot of work. You got to really devote some time to it. So find the time.
In your spare time. I was going to ask you about Soundtrack Cologne because you're going to be on a panel with some of your colleagues. Gareth Coker is going to be there and Takeshi Furukawa and Peter Schlosser. And again, how do you distill what you do into the brevity of a panel like that?
You just, you know, usually there's someone is asking you questions and sort of, you know, giving you, just like you're doing now, you know, just starting a conversation, you just do your best. You try to answer the questions as best you can and speak off the cuff. I'm not preparing any speech or anything like that. And you know, I teach at USC and have for about 8 years now. I teach scoring for video games, you know, 2 hours a week. And so I am comfortable speaking because I do it. I've done it for so many years now. I am comfortable speaking about the art and craft of game music, and so I'm not worried about it, let's put it that way. I just kind of look forward to it. I enjoy it. I've been to Soundtrack Cologne before. This is not my first invite there. I'm very grateful to them for inviting me again. Thank you guys, because it's an honor to be invited somewhere like that and then to have your music performed. Last time they did not have a performance, so this to have this performance is going to be just really, really the icing on the cake.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It sounds like it's going to be just incredible. And like I said, I'm really looking forward to playing Torn. And you mentioned that there will be a soundtrack release, too.
Yes, Perez Saraband will be issuing the soundtrack coming out in, I think, August 24th. They really, really loved the score and wanted to release it as a soundtrack. So I'm really, really excited about that. So, yeah, that's coming out soon. So any of you out there who are interested, look for it.
I'm sure there'll be one or two people that'll probably want to scoop it up.
I mean, soundtracks are not like, you know, the people, you don't like get rich from soundtrack score sales. None, almost zero. But it's an honor that they're interested. And so it's really just cool that they're going to release it. They love the music enough to go for it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Gary, I have had such a great time talking with you. I really appreciate your time. And I just really honestly can't wait to play this game and see and experience your music in the game. So thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Kate. Pleasure.